The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better decisions. If you'd like to join in the conversation today and you are listening live, then find the community chat room section of octalkradio.net's website, log in, post your thoughts, questions, ideas. Paul, our producer, will peruse them and possibly bring them to my attention, and I can work them into the conversation that we're going to have with one of our two guests today. Speaking of our two guests today, it gives me great pleasure to welcome my first guest. My first guest is Ron Stein, who's Vice President of Business Development with PTS Staffing, and I'm excited to have Ron on the show. A couple reasons. One, PTS Staffing is a family-owned business, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. And they're also focused on providing engineering and professional staffing solutions for companies. And I'm curious to have him share with us this concept of focusing on a niche and being very successful inside of that business niche. But first, let me just say, Ron, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thank you. Great to be on board.
Well, let's get started by asking a little bit about you. So share with our audience, Ron, your path to your firm.
My path started with my education at Cal State University Northridge. I graduated there as an electrical engineer and had an opportunity to join Fluor Corporation. They were in Los Angeles. Fluor was a big international engineering and construction type company that built a lot of infrastructure. Refineries, chemical plants around the world, and joined them and actually spent 20 years with them. During my career at Fluor, one of the greatest opportunities I had was to take an early class or session in Toastmasters. The education was one ingredient to my ultimate success. Toastmasters had to be another one. Toastmasters, I think, led me into opportunities to get transferred from electrical engineering into project management, where I had a chance to oversee all disciplines. And the project management experience gave me great opportunities to learn relationships and how to organize and communicate and coordinate with vast amounts of people. And then when the oil embargo hit in the 80s, the industry kind of decimated, and I jumped out of it and had a chance to join a firm in the entertainment industry in sales. So those four things, the education was the foundation, the Toastmasters training, the project management training, and then in sales, I had a couple great mentors that taught me how to sell, how to work with clients and that type of thing.
Okay, that is all interesting experience, but I'm not sure how you ended up in the staffing industry. So what was the inspiration for starting your firm?
Well, having 20 years in the industry and having relationships, I was out at one of the local refineries, actually seconded there doing maintenance projects with an engineering company. And the refinery manager decided these engineering companies are too expensive. Get them out of here. Well, I knew the work had to go on, and so I talked to the engineering manager at the time, and I says, how about having people seconded to the refinery instead of being built from an engineering company? And the billing rates would probably be about half the cost. And so that was the inspiration. He bought into it, and as they say, that's the history of it. From that point, we now have master agreements with all the manufacturers of our transportation fuels. We have agreements with most of the major engineering companies to provide staff to augment their projects. Over the years, you know, we have eliminated the word overhead from the corporate dictionary, and so engineering firms don't have any extra people in a closet, so when they do get awarded a major job, they're hurting for people to get the job done. That's where we come in. We partner with them, and we basically augment their core staff.
You know, that's interesting, your perception and description of that, because I can share with the audience and with you that in one of the peer groups that Doug, my business partner, and I led last week, the conversation came up about this very issue and this concept of how can a business with integrity make as much of their employees and staffing needs a variable expense as possible, as opposed to maybe a fixed expense. And it certainly sounds like, from your description of how you're helping your clients, in a positive way, you're enabling them to scale and ramp their workforce through a variable cost model.
Right. When they peak and valley, they use us to do the peaks and the valleys. And they keep their core cost constant.
Okay. So help us to understand a little bit more about how has the current economy, the recession, the change, the new normal, call it what you will, the business environment that has existed in the U.S. for the last 3 years affected PTS staffing?
Let me initially tell you a little bit about what differentiates us, and that's going to lead into the answer to your question.
Great.
Our business model, you know, having worked in the engineering, procurement, construction industry for decades, I learned from the supplier side, you know, what the clients wanted from their suppliers. Our business model, when we started, we differentiate ourselves because we focus on our clients, giving them the best quality talent at a cost-effective rate. We focus on the employees, giving them fair compensation and a great set of health benefits. That leaves us in third position. We're happy to be there because many of our competitors focus on increasing margin, and forget the service, the needs of their clients and their employees. By keeping the clients and employees happy, the freight train keeps moving. You want to know about the business environment?
Yes.
Well, the challenging that faces us is California is having a tough time having constant employment. And with the lack of employment, our businesses here are just really hurting. The impact on our economy of the transportation fuels is costing us a ton of money, forcing businesses to lose. The fuel cost is actually good for us because there's more work in the industry adhering to Air Resources Board requirements. The bad news is the other 37 million have to pay for it. The continuous actions toward cleaner air in California, i.e., that global warming initiative, you know, it brings up an analogy of crossing the street within the guidelines of the crosswalk and getting hit by a truck. You're right, but you're dead right. The regulatory nightmares that are affecting our economy in California and the extra cost for transportation fuels have a major impact on California. Last year, California lost 4,600 businesses. That's an average of more than 12 a day. That was according to a study done by the economic modeling specialist. And now, with California having the most businesses, yeah, maybe the economy had a lot to contribute to losing such a large number of businesses. But there's a guy, Joe Vranich. He's a business relocation coach. He tracks the California businesses that actually leave California, that do their relocate out of California or do their expansion outside of California. Last year, there was 200 businesses that left California. That poor business climate, and with the regulatory nightmares and taxes on businesses, it's a major disincentive to be entrepreneurial. And that has led California having the worst unemployment at about 12%. Now, you have to take a look at the current situation, which is going to get worse. The California Energy Commission, the CEC, they estimate we pay probably an extra 15 cents a gallon for our gasoline because we have such a clean boutique formula. And in addition, California has the second largest state fuel tax of 43%, which is higher than the national average. In the USA, in the entire United States, only California refineries make our gasoline. No other refinery in the United States makes our gasoline. And then in a state, now this is the thing that really hurts, in a state that contributes less than 1% of the world's greenhouse gases, the implementation of this global warming initiative is going to result in more cost for the California transportation fuels. Bad for business. Take a look at the world. The USA has 300 million people. China and India collectively have 2.4 billion, and they want to be like us and have the same lifestyles as us, and they have no environmental regulations. The manufacturing facilities of our transportation fuels, they estimate that the implementation of this greenhouse gas initiative is probably going to add another 50 cents to a buck in the next several years for this go-it-alone state of California that contributes less than 1% to the greenhouse gases. That's going to have a major impact on the economy. It's great for us because it's going to require a lot of technical people to support that design effort and construction effort, but the other 37 million people are going to have to pay for it.
Interesting perspective, because while by your own admission these are tailwinds for your specific business because you're in the niche of supplying the talent required to do the work.
Correct.
As a member of the community and the state, you see also the headwinds that it creates for the rest of the population that aren't in your niche, and the general cost of living impact that it's having on Californians overall. Interesting. We're going to take a break, and when we come back with this interview with Ron Stein, I'm going to ask him to share with you, our listening audience, of all the things that he's learned in business, is there a particular guiding principle that has evolved in how he and the family are leading PTS staffing? So we'll be back with Ron Stein answering the guiding principle question. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
There's something happening out there today. All across America, we're seeing encouraging signs of economic recovery. Businesses are once again thinking about new growth, and new opportunities are emerging. But it raises the question, is your company positioned to take full advantage of the economic recovery and the opportunities it presents? Maybe it's time to ask, how has the recession impacted your business model? Is your business as relevant as it once was? Should you consider entering new markets or expanding into new categories? And what do customers really value about their relationship with you? The golden thread through all these questions and the answer to each and every one of them can be found in just one place. Your brand. It's much deeper than your logo and much bigger than your advertising. Your brand is the enabler of your entire business strategy. Rikus Baird is a brand strategy firm that can help. They specialize in business branding. They've helped hundreds of companies from startups to Fortune 500 leverage their brands to drive growth. They can do the same for yours. It's really quite simple. Find out more, just visit brandingbusiness.com. That's www.brandingbusiness.com. And plant the seed for economic growth.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plan and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. Ronald Stein is our guest today. Before the break, we said we're going to ask you to talk about your guiding principle. Ron, would you be so kind to share that with our audience today?
The one guiding principle has got to be passion. Do what you do. do it better than anybody else, but you got to have the passion. The passion is contagious. It goes throughout the organization. Passion for what you do, networking, relationships, every niche industry, I don't care what it is, that's what we do. We started PTS, we had like 20 years of relationships. We nurture those on a daily basis. We volunteer our services. We get involved with the organizations of the industry. We're heavily involved with the Orange County Business Council, heavily involved with the Western States Petroleum Association, which is all the owners and engineering companies that support the infrastructure side of the world. And volunteering and participating gets you tremendous credibility with your clients. But passion has got to be number one. If you don't have the passion, you're going to lose out to your competition.
I also know that your firm is active with California State University Fullerton and the Mahalo College of Business and Economics.
Yes. We have a lot of give back. We do. We basically, we're a sponsor and an advisory board member of both the Family Business Council as well as the Center for Entrepreneurship at Cal State Fullerton. They recently built a large business college, and we contributed to that. In fact, one of the lecture halls has a Steinfeld lecture hall name on it. So we do. We give back quite a bit. I mentor students over there, seniors and graduate students. And so give back is that's part of the organization.
I think that's very important. I'm a big proponent of Cal State Fullerton and the Mahalo College as well. I've had a number of their professors, the associate deans on the program as well. And I think it's great that the business community finds ways to give back to the future business community leaders through things like you're doing with Mahalo College. So I'm glad that you were comfortable mentioning that here today on the radio program.
You know, in addition to the give back, we've had opportunities through both of those organizations, the Orange County Business Council and the Western States Petroleum Association. We have opportunities to visit our elected officials in Sacramento. We've had opportunities to have articles published in the Orange County Business Journal, the Orange County Register, Capital Weekly in Sacramento. I personally have had a couple opportunities to testify before our elected officials. And, again, that kind of involvement, to be honest, I didn't realize at the time, but the industry has tremendous respect for us standing up for them and that type of thing. So it provides invaluable, priceless credibility back to us supporting the industry.
I wonder if you could share with our audience a little bit about a current challenge that's facing the firm and the ideas and ideas and steps that you're taking to mitigate that challenge.
Well, I'm trying to talk to everybody I can, because there's a misconception out there that we're addicted to oil. And my perception is we're spoiled with oil. We're not addicted to oil. We're addicted to the lifestyle that oil provides. You know, oil's been an inexpensive source of virtually everything in our daily lives. Wherever you look, you know, there's products, there's computers, TVs, cell phones, air transportation, plastics, cosmetics, drywall, paint, appliances, mattresses, cooking, you know, just to mention a few. Solar and wind power will have no effect on those daily products. That's the foundation of our life. And the challenge facing PTS is going to be basically meeting the challenge associated with the huge risk that California has opted to do with this go-it-alone philosophy of being green. Again, we only represent 1% of the greenhouse gases. We're going to change the standard for the world? You know, give me a break. India and China, you know, they got 2.4 billion people, and they're just going and blowing, and they want to be like us, and they've got no environmental controls. And like I say, I think there's got to be conversation, because we're killing the economy here in California. Our unemployment's high. Entrepreneurs work on a simple concept of ROI, and when transportation fuels, which is the major cost of the business, is the highest in the country, and going higher, you know, how is that going to make us more competitive to attract businesses? So that's our message is we're trying to get people talking instead of going off on a tangent. You know, it's great to, you know, go for clean air, but, you know, just like the analogy of walking across the street, you know, we could be right, but we could be dead right. We'll have the cleanest air, but there'll be nobody working in California. So that's a challenge. That's a challenge for every citizen in the United States, especially
right.
here in California.
And it kind of reinforces the points, some of the points that you'd made earlier in kind of helping to get the numbers behind your perspective as well, kind of brings another understanding to it. I only have a few minutes left to be with you here today on Critical Mass, the radio show, and I had a couple other things that I wanted to ask you. I'm not going to be able to get to them all, Ron, but I guess I would like to ask you the counterbalance to the challenge question, which is generally the question I ask later in the interview, but I'm going to ask it now because I don't have the time to get through all the questions, and that is, think about and share with us the current opportunities for growth facing PTS staffing, and sort of share with us what that opportunity is, and as you're able to successfully leverage it, what does that mean for the firm?
We have, because of the last couple of years when the economy went belly up, a lot of our clients had projects they planned to do, and when the economy went in the toilet, they basically deferred them. Now that the economy's coming out a little bit, they have some money to do the projects they wanted to do, and they're doing them, and the foreseeable future for the energy side, the current petrochemical as well as alternative energies, is going to be huge to supply the needs of the world. That's going to be a real challenge to find the people. I mean, today, we could hire 200 people today if we could find them. We're talking about educated people who have experience, and we're talking about, you know, the compensation is like $80,000 to $150,000 a year. We could hire today if we could find them. And we're looking throughout the United States and Canada. So,
okay,
so the educational database is, I mean, from the schools is not quite there for us.
So I'm going to ask you an unplanned question, but I'm sure many in the listening audience are parents of children or possibly people considering other avenues for careers. What type of education would these people need to have to be a part of your industry?
For us, engineering. And I think there's a requirement, responsibility on the college to provide the education to the students. And in addition, I think the industry has an obligation to provide opportunities for internships, because a lot of our industry, it can be very intimidating. You know, you go into a refinery, a power plant, a wastewater treatment plant, that could be very intimidating. So having an internship kind of like breaks the ice, but getting a degree in something that can be used, and there's a definite shortage. I mean, the aging population in the technical arena is just unbelievable, because a lot of people came in like 30, 40 years ago when a lot of infrastructure was being built.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 30, 40 years, there hasn't been that much being built, so a lot of people haven't come back in. And part of the problem of the database we have is most of our candidates have 20 and 30 years of experience. Right behind them, nothing. So anybody coming in, if they've got the right attitude and the right chemistry and passion to work, the growth curve for them climbing the corporate ladder is going to be fantastic. So I would encourage everybody to go in for get engineering degrees. That is very useful. It goes across a wide range of industries.
And from your perspective, you said this, but I'm going to ask you to restate it. Is that a future-proof career? From what you can tell, the demand is not a passing requirement, but one that you think will be here for the years to come?
Engineering, you can use that everywhere. Now, for example, I mean, I got my engineering degree, but am I doing engineering now? No, but I work with engineers.
Mm-hmm.
When I went into project management, I really wasn't doing any engineering, but I was communicating with all the different disciplines of project management. Now, being in recruiting, we're still talking to them. We can walk the walk and talk the talk. So it opens up a vast array of opportunities, from doing the engineering, doing project management, doing sales, but you got to be able to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Right. If someone would like to learn more about your story, your firm's story, or the kind of services that PTS Staffing provides, Ron, how do they find you online? What's your website?
www.ptsstaffing.com.
And so be careful because there's two S's in there, right? PTS and then staffing.
Right.
So you got to have back-to-back S's. All right. Well, the time has flown by. I appreciate the time you put into preparing for our interview today, the time you've given us here on the program, the fact that you're a friend of the program, and sort of welcome. I'd like to welcome you here to the ever-expanding Critical Mass for Business community.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much for your time, Ron.
Thank you. You have a great day and have a great week.
Okay, goodbye.
Take care.
Ron Stein, Vice President of Business Development for PTS Staffing, and gave us a plethora of information and kind of opportunity to see his industry from a more holistic view relative to how it affects and integrates with the California business economy. Our second guest is a CPA with DBB McKinnon. David Goslin will be joining us, and we're going to talk about several things. I'm going to ask him also to share kind of, based on his work as a CPA, what are the top issues CPAs of mid-market firms should be thinking about? Not before, though, we take this break to hear a word from a sponsor.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. If you're listening to us live, thank you very much for taking the time. If you're listening to our show at some point in the future as a business podcast, possibly off of Apple iTunes or one of the other various podcasting services that we subscribe to, thank you for finding our program, and I hope you will become a loyal and regular listener of the program. All right, well, we're turning our attention, as I said, to our second guest, and David is a CPA, and we are going to be talking about a variety of topics that are important to mid-market CEOs and business owners. But first, let me welcome David to the program. Welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Why don't we start by asking you a question about yourself? Tell us a little bit about your professional experience.
So I got to DBB McKinnon, and I've been with the audit practice here for over 7 years, and I came straight out of college. One of the partners here, you know, gave me a chance and worked my way up. And through this experience, I've gotten to work on SEC clients and private clients and venture-backed clients, and all on the audit and attestation side, and also consulting as well.
So where'd you go to college?
University of Arizona.
Oh, okay.
Go Wildcats.
Yeah, all right. A little Pac-12 action there. All right.
That's right.
Tell us about what makes, from your perspective and what you hear from your clients, you know, why do people choose and stay with your firm for the services that you provide? What makes your firm different?
That's a really important question. One thing that that kind of differentiates us, at least on the public company side, is that we're PCAOB registered, which means that we have kind of a big brother, a watchdog that oversees our work and the quality of our work. And if you go on their website and you look up our report, you'll see that we have no public comments, which means we do a quality job, a good job of auditing the companies that we work on. But beyond that, on a personal level, I think that what we give to our clients is, one, responsiveness. We're very personable, have a very personable staff here. If you give us a question, if you shoot us an email, we'll always get right back to you. And I think in this day and age, people value that responsiveness.
Wait a minute. You're having a CPA firm, an accounting firm, and you have a personable staff? Come on. Who are you trying to kid?
Can you believe that?
No, I don't believe that at all. I'm sorry.
It's something you don't hear too often, but it must be an anomaly, right?
Well, I asked what makes you different, and there you go. You nailed it. You nailed it, David. Help us to understand. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. I love accounting firms. They're great trusted advisors for mid-market CEOs. Many business owners lean very heavily on their accounting firms and their CPAs to give them the kind of advice that only they know how to give them, frankly. So I have a special place for CPA firms. Let me ask you, of all your experiences and lessons that you've learned in 7 years with DBB McKinnon, have you developed sort of a guiding principle for how you run your practice and work with your clients? And if you do, could you share that guiding principle with our audience?
Yeah. It's actually, I think, at least personally, and I would say our practice does the same thing. I actually get from a quote I learned a long time ago, and that's, no matter the task, great or small, do it right or not at all. And I really believe that that's what should guide your business. No matter if it's a small client or a large client, no matter if it brings in a little bit of revenue or a lot of revenue, you should give them the same attention to detail, the same effort, and hopefully they'll return their trust and see a value in the service that you're providing.
That is easy to say and hard to do sometimes, isn't it? Because especially during these leaner times, the demand on your time is so precious. Sometimes it's hard not to lose some of the clients that maybe are driving less of the bookings and less of representing less of your book. But you never know where they're going to end up in the future as well, do you? I'm sure over 7 years, you've seen some small clients that have grown quite large.
You know, that exciting thing about working with, smaller clients is a lot of times they have an idea, a dream, a little bit of money, and then they just go for it. And that's exciting to see an entrepreneur succeed big, make his dreams come true and be a part of that as well, and be a trusted advisor or whatever you need to be along the way. And part of that, providing that service, is making sure that the team that you build around you is smart, intelligent, and not just business savvy, but has good personal skills, has good technical skills. And if you start developing, not just as a CPA, but as a person, you develop your staff to be like that, then I think you will, bring everything that you need to each task, to each job, and clients respond to that.
We're going to take our final sponsorship break. And when we come back, we're going to ask David to talk about the issues that he has seen, what the top issues for you, our listening audience, which are CEOs of mid-market and entrepreneurs and mid-market and small companies, should be kind of worried about, concerned about, or focused on. And you're getting this from a person who's very familiar with working with companies the sizes of generally the listening audience here on Critical Mass, the radio show. So first, we're going to take a break, then we're going to have him come back, and David's going to share that with you. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
If you are a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gefella has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives in the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
Large companies with complex sales channels have sophisticated lead management needs. They require customized lead management systems and services and integration with additional systems. That's why, since 1981, these companies have relied on SmartLead by AdTrack, the only full-service lead management company with customized systems for lead management, Salesforce automation, and analytics. These systems are managed by each client's dedicated account manager and are integrated with SmartLead's in-house marketing services that include a contact center, email marketing services, print services, direct mail and fulfillment, and an ISO-certified warehouse. SmartLead by AdTrack. 3 decades of pioneering lead management best practices and systems for complex lead management needs. For more information, visit our website at smartlead.com.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. David Goslin is our guest. So, David, share with us a little bit about what you know as far as top issues CEOs should have on the radar.
As far as financial purposes, I think that there's a lot of things that the recession brought to the forefront. A lot of times during recessions, you have employees who may become disgruntled. That brings up the issue of fraud, your internal controls, how those work appropriately in your firm, and having those things set out. If you have a structured organization, you can mitigate those risks from kind of a micro perspective. And a lot of times a good auditor like our firm can provide value by searching out during an audit where fraud could occur, where internal controls might be weak. More on a macro perspective, there's lots of financial things coming down the pipeline. You have a potential change over to international accounting standards for accounting purposes, which small and middle market firms may see coming online in the next couple of years. I think also a lot of what you see on TV is true to a certain extent. There's a lot of uncertainty out there in the marketplace. You don't know if demand will be there. You don't know if you're going to be regulated more or less. You don't know if the credit availability might be there. So there's a lot of variables, I would say, you know, this year and probably the next coming years that are very hard to assess.
I'm going to circle back to your earlier point on fraud, because I'm always it's always interesting to me when we bring in, and generally once a year, to each of the four peer groups that we lead, we ask someone to come in and speak on this topic, because what we find is the members enjoy it, frankly, and also it really requires, it causes them to pause and think a little bit. So I guess my question about fraud is, what I have heard from these exchanges and what I've taken away at a highest level is, it's really not a question of whether the employee is trustworthy or not from a CEO's perspective. It's a question of, are you putting them in a position where they have the opportunity to commit fraud? And as the CEO, you've got to sort of protect your employees by not putting them in that situation where they have the opportunity to do something that they shouldn't do. So from your perspective, could you build on what I just said? If you disagree with it, go for it. If you agree with it and can expand upon it, David, if you would do that as well, I would appreciate it. Because many times people, the stories that get told are the fraud is committed by the least likely long-term employee, or, you know, the stories are almost too good to, right. You know, they're almost better than fiction sometimes.
Well, the fraud stories are always the juiciest. That's why everybody likes to hear them. But, you know, I think from a CEO's perspective, if you have a good system of internal controls, of checks and balances, you can have any employee in any position, and you know, theoretically speaking, there should be a check and balance in place to catch anything that does occur. Now, when you're talking about smaller to mid-sized businesses, sometimes you don't have enough resources to create internal controls that mitigate those risks. So it becomes quite a dilemma. How much do you try to weed out? How much do you try to mitigate your risk and not put that employee in this situation? So it's kind of a cost-benefit analysis almost at a certain point when you get down to the smaller and mid-market companies.
But whenever it deals with money, right? Whether they be checks or your banking accounts or any of that type of aspect of your business, that's really where the internal controls have to be strong. There's no excuse for not having checks and balances in that area of the business. Do you agree?
Right. I mean, there's been instances you see where there might be 15 credit cards out there in a company or debit cards lying around, and people have access to cash. And a long-term employee might become a little disgruntled, and maybe they go to Costco and they buy one for you, one for me. I mean, those things kind of have happened, and you see that happen. And it's not that it couldn't happen to any company, because it can. It's just catching it before it becomes an issue. And again, just having strong internal controls in place and those checks and balances, even sometimes hiring a financial expert to go in there and help you determine if there is a risk, may pay off in the end.
I wonder if you could think back to a time in your professional career, kind of a past experience where you learned a valuable business lesson, but it came through what at the time was a difficult or challenging experience. Sometimes I punch it up by saying, can you talk about a painful business lesson you learned in your career? Do you have something like that, David, that you could share with our audience?
Well, I think I know your previous guest talked a little bit about the recession, and the one thing I learned out of that, because I think it kind of affected us all, is luckily, my firm was well prepared for any kind of fluctuation in the market that came, and we, strived through it and were able to come out on the other side. But as a person within the firm, aspiring to become a principal of the firm, I hadn't necessarily at the time thought about the future, bringing in a book of business, really going out and marketing myself, because ultimately what a CPA's business is selling the services of yourself, not necessarily a product. And I think that taught me to, hey, I can't rely on people to give things to me all my life. I have to go out there and work for it and make it happen. And actually, Rick, I heard you talk one time, and you recommended the book, Who Moved My Cheese? And I ended up picking it up at the store and reading it, and that, brought me back to this issue. I have to go out and find it for myself. I have to go do it. And that led me to marketing myself more, getting out and networking, and slowly starting to try to bring in business for myself. So when a recession does hit next time, and ultimately it will again, hopefully I'll be more prepared as an individual.
I like asking that question because invariably, David, the answers are a foundational response. It's something that the guest will never has learned from and isn't about to repeat. And so for me, I like it too because it's another learning moment for the audience who maybe haven't experienced that. They can vicariously learn by your past experience. And I think it was a common lesson learned from this slowdown, this economic slowdown recession that we're living through, is for service providers, the importance of controlling your own destiny and having your own book of business and being seen by your employer, your firm, as an individual who's creating value by virtue of the book of business that you're managing for them.
That's absolutely right. Having personal responsibility is a significant value that employers look for. And if you have it and you can bring it to the table, you become invaluable.
I'm going to ask you about the future opportunity for growth. You might have teased it a little bit by saying there may be these international accounting standards that are going to be kind of put upon American business, et cetera. But, sometimes out of those type of regulations and changes, I'm sure that was the way for Sarbanes-Oxley for maybe not your firm, but certainly for a lot of other accounting firms. And sometimes out of regulation comes business opportunities. How long-lived they are depends on how significant the change is. But could you share with our audience a current opportunity for growth facing DBB McKinnon, and maybe you and your book of business, and explain the impact it could have on you or the firm as you're able to successfully leverage this opportunity?
Right, and I think there's two really strong paths that my firm can take to grow, and one is with public companies. A lot of times when you talk about CPA firms and you're talking about public company audits, you think of the big fours of the world, larger regional firms. But being a PCAOB registered company, we can actually go in and audit a smaller company, which they're required to get from the SEC, for the SEC, at a much lower cost, because you never see our name on a hat in a golf tournament. So a lot of times you're paying higher fees with a bigger company for their marketing efforts, whereas we grow organically through word of mouth, and we can oftentimes save a company quite a bit of money. And the other path that we can grow is providing consulting services. A lot of the smaller to mid-sized companies, especially around the Orange County area, oftentimes don't have the internal expertise to develop financial statements or develop reliable financial information, for that matter. And we can go in and almost be a contract controller or a supervisor to help them get them to their end goal. And that's a kind of two different business models, but I think two models that will help our firm grow in the near future.
Good. Is there anything about you or DBB McKinnon that I didn't think to ask you today that you wanted to say as we wrap up your interview today here on Critical Mass, the radio show?
Well, I'd just like to say that we're a full-service account CPA firm, so we do tax, IRS representation, attestation, consulting. And the one thing I think that makes us unique and separates us from the regional firms around us are all our employees, they specialize in attestation or tax. So we don't have employees that necessarily cross between the two disciplines, which oftentimes creates a kind of homogenized knowledge of accounting rather than specialties. And when you get to the big four firms or the larger firms around the country, you get that specialized knowledge, and we can provide that for a much lower cost. Like I said, we don't have the marketing costs that most of those firms do. So I think we have real market advantages while providing this better value to our clients.
And if someone would like to find your firm online, what's the website they should go to?
Yeah, it's www.dbbmckinnon.com. And I'm also a part of the Elite OC, which I think you know, and we're having an event on Thursday at Landmark. And if someone heard this radio and this radio cast and they want to come meet me, I'll be there from 6 to 8 at Landmark, and we're supporting the Orangewood Children's Foundation. I would love to talk to any about business or their insights in Orange County.
Excellent organization to be supporting. I do know of the Elite OC. I think it's a fine organization. Hopefully someone will take you up on your offer. Can you spell DBB McKinnon for people?
Yeah, it's DBB as in dog boy boy, McKinnon, McKennon.
Great. Well, I've enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for taking the time to share a bit of your knowledge with our audience and kind of welcome to the Critical Mass business community here in Orange County.
Hey, thank you so much, Rick. Pleasure to be on this, and I'll do it anytime.
Thank you.
All right.
Good day. Well, I hope you found interesting both the interviews that I was able to conduct today. I found our guests to have deep knowledge in their areas of expertise, whether it be financial accounting or engineering and petroleum. Be listening to future broadcasts here. If you're listening as a podcast, remember, we broadcast live from 4 to 5 p.m. on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, heard exclusively on octalkradio.net. And this is Rick Franzi saying until the next time we have a chance to chat, here's hoping that all your decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, the radio show, only on octalkradio.net.